But in any case, the important point I want to make is that a teacher is one who is at least two steps ahead of the child. In fact, in Sri Aurobindo's words, a teacher is one who is able to uplift the enthusiasm of the child. This is the minimum definition of a teacher. A teacher is one who is able to uplift the enthusiasm of the child. Whatever enthusiasm the child has got is not enough. There is a role of a teacher. And the role of a teacher is that whatever enthusiasm the child possesses, he should be able to uplift it. Now, by whatever means, very often you find that many good mothers, in knowledge terms, they may not be very learned, but they become great inspirers of their children. Even the learned sons of good mothers, they derive as inspiration from their mothers. Shivaji was a great conqueror, great administrator, but his inspiration was from his mother. Now, this is because this is the power of the teacher. He should have the power to lift the enthusiasm of the child by whatever means. It may be because of the character that one possesses, great fire of aspiration, great knowledge that he or she might possess, or whatever. This is what, in terms of Rousseau, he says, taking the hand of the pupil in your hand, that is the mark of a teacher. You should be able to take the hand of the pupil in your hand, that is the mark. So the minimum thing that a teacher should possess is this power. And this power comes from a certain kind of vision. So a teacher must have a vision, and that vision should be capable of lifting up the child. These are the two things that you should possess as a teacher. And then as a result of your vision, you should be constantly in search as to how that vision can be further developed, can further be enriched, can further be chiseled, sharpened, and can be so expressed that children can understand and can feel that to be a kind of a light, in the light of which the child can progress. Now, this is the background against which I personally would like to make a few statements. But this is just a background. That is to say, I don't take the view, there is a view, should there be structure of education or no structure of education? It's a question which Sanjeev very often has discussed with me. Now, there is an extreme view, there should be no structure at all. And I said in ashram at one time, they said, no lectures, no curriculum, no examinations. It would be a kind of an argument against all structures. But the moment the teacher has a vision and a guideline, already some kind of a structure has come into existence. The only question is, the structure should be such it does not imprison anybody. And this is a very difficult problem. How to have a structure which is not a structure? It is similar to the question which my mother asked at the highest level of her experimentation with the body, where she felt that the human body has a skeleton, and this skeleton is an obstruction to the development of the supramentalization of the body. Because a skeleton is a rigid skeleton. So actually mother was asking the question, how to make the body so supple, so very subtle, that this skeleton's rigidity would be broken, and yet the individual may be able to stand up. In fact, There is a beautiful conversation between Satprem and the mother on this subject. And she says that, Satprem says that small child, for example, his skeleton is not rigid. So mother says, yes, but the child cannot walk. I mean, if you break the structure of the skeleton and the force of the skeleton, then this is the problem. And I think this is the basic problem also of education. You should have a structure and no structure. So, such a structure that it is not serving as a structure. And this is a very difficult problem. That's why I said education is a very difficult process, because basically a true education is one in which you neither hammer nor you allow the child to go wayward and haywire. This is the contrast, the two conflicting tendencies, and we have to bring them into harmony. So in a debate in education, I feel that I cannot take part in a debate because I am neither here nor there, and I believe that both should be there but somehow should be synthesized. But synthesized by what? And there is alchemy, and I personally believe that that alchemy is still not known. We have to, this is the field, Auroville is a field where we have to make an experiment. Now, having given this background, I put the following questions. I think we all agree that we are here to give a concrete shape to mother's dream. I take it it is an incontrovertible statement, and we study mother's dream again and again, and we want to realize this dream as faithfully as we can. I think if you can bring a chair from outside, you bring a chair from outside. Now mother's dream is very clear, where she says there should be a place on the earth where students do not study to pass examinations and to obtain certificates. These words are absolutely clear and categorical. She has also added that students should study to develop their faculties and to study the secrets of the world. These two very important words she has given. Not to pass examinations and obtain certificates. But at the same time to develop faculties and also to learn the secrets of the world. Now both these propositions have to be read together. Now developing faculties very often involves passing examinations. You need to pass tests. Certain faculties can be developed when they receive a test. So mother is not opposed to passing examinations or to face examinations. Very often people therefore misunderstand, say mother is opposed to examinations, which is not true. Passing examination is a motive of study. That is what is not wanted by the mother. You study to pass examination. That is not what mother wants. It doesn't mean that you should not have examinations, you should not pass the examinations. That is not the correct meaning of it. development of faculties itself requires passing tests. And we knew, for example, even for sports, mother herself used to measure with tape how much a student has been able to jump, how fast he has been able to run. And there were hurdles in the tests of their sports. So it is not that mother was opposed to tests. On the contrary, mother wrote to me once, tests are and will be. But is very important, a silly mechanical mind passing an examination, and that with flying colors, is an indictment on the examination system. What kind of examination do you want to give to child? If the child is to pass an examination which he can pass even with a silly mind, then such examinations are out of the court. Now most of the examinations of the world are like that, and that is the whole problem. By memorizing, by mugging up, you can pass an examination, and that will be flying colors. And after examination you forget everything that you have learned. For 5 days you learn at the last moment, mug up, vomit out, and you pass an examination. It is this kind of examination that is out of the court, whether here or there or anywhere. Then she said, examinations should not be uniform. The same examination for everyone. The examination should be adapted to each child and his progress. Examination should come to a child at a time when he is ready for it. Now these are all the qualifications that mother has made when she said tests are and will be. And you can say there is no rigid stamp that examinations are to be encouraged or not encouraged. It's a very subtle process in which examinations have to come in the process of education. But the most important thing is that you are developing faculties of the children. And that is an important point. Ultimately, whatever you do should ultimately develop the faculties. And this is a very vast subject. What are the faculties? And I'll come to this a little later. Second aspect is, the student should study to find the secrets of the world. Now this is another aspect. What are the secrets of the world? And if you study the Sri Aurobindo's and mother's exposition of the world and the secrets of the world, you find that they put before us the secrets of matter, life, mind, and of the worlds which are beyond the mind and behind the mind. The universe behind the universe, or universes behind the universe. In the Kathopanishad there is a beautiful sentence: one who thinks that this world alone is, will always go round and round in misery. It's a very beautiful sentence. One who knows that this world alone is, goes round and round in misery. So secrets of the world would mean what? That this world alone is not. That there are worlds behind worlds and universes behind universe. Now this is the meaning of what mother says, to learn the secrets of the world. Now when we come to the subject of the matter of secrets of the world, we come to the what is a very important educationally, and that is what is called subjects of study. This is what normally is called in our whole syllabus, as curricula, wherever you go, we always ask, what subjects are you studying? And this brings us to one of the most important issues of education. Traditionally in India and elsewhere, during the last 500 years, we are all accustomed to a system of subjects. The idea of faculties has gone into the background. We don't ask the question, what are the faculties we have to develop? Not that development of faculties is denied by anybody, no. But it is expected that through the study of subjects, faculties will develop. We are not making a scientific study as to whether this is a true statement. There is no doubt that by studying some subjects, some faculties do develop. But we are not asking whether all the faculties that are needed to be developed are developed or not. And what subjects will develop, what kind of faculties, and in what way will you study a subject by developing what faculties. We do not explain this or don't undertake this study. And that is one of the important problems that we have to face in our development of education here.